Welcome to our new podcast. We are calling it Private Conversations. I'm here with Simon Bruce, who is senior counsel at the firm, having been a partner in the firm until January. My name is Bryony Cove, and I am in the private client team at the firm. We're going to have a series of podcasts which involve conversations between two people who know about how families function, about how we advise our clients, about how we help improve their lives, improve their situations and deal with some of the crises that they come across. So Simon has joined me very kindly. I should tell you a little bit about Simon. He has been with the firm since he was a trainee. Simon, when did you join the firm?
Gosh, I think it was 1984. I've been here 35 years anyway.
Yeah, so and is a much loved member of the team. Also a very loving fan of Liverpool Football Club.
Slightly. So from the age of five, I've been an absolutely fervent supporter of Liverpool. And I'm as keen a supporter now of Liverpool Football Club as I was when I was five. And that's saying something.
And we all know it, which is fantastic. We're going to talk a little bit about what we do for our clients. This is the first time we've done this, so forgive any pauses or hopefully no uncomfortable silences. We have a good relationship, you and I, Simon, so we can talk about things. We realise this is going out to the world. We're going to be discreet about our client situations, etc. But we think we can share some nuggets of wisdom, hopefully. So there's sort of three main things we're going to try and do during the conversation. A little bit about our take on what worries our clients, what keeps them up at night. And this won't just be about the fact that they tend to be very wealthy people. There are human stories here. Maybe Simon might tell us a little bit about some of his client experiences, and I can maybe mention a couple of mine if there's time. And then maybe just a little bit about the future of family law, given the global nature of a lot of the families that we look after. And Simon might give us some of his views on that. So Simon, to kick off, you've seen clients, you know, through the last 35 years at the firm, and their worries will have changed through time. Are there any enduring concerns that you find that clients have that come around again and again? I mean, bearing in mind that you've dealt with divorce work, but we now work a lot more in the sort of planning stages as well.
It's been a very enjoyable journey that I've had during the last 35 years as a lawyer here. Because when I started off, family law was bluntly just a type of litigation. Our family team, like all family teams, was organised within our litigation team, yeah, within our disputes team. And it was simply a variety of litigation. And so it was something which involved a lot of angst, always, for me as a lawyer, because every single day I was having to take a position that was contrary to someone else, in all the cases I did. Over the last 35 years, I'm delighted to say that the national trend, the international trend, and the trend certainly within this firm, has been much more consensual. It's been much more peacemaking. And that sounds very idealistic, but it's absolutely true. You know, I remember about 7 or 8 years ago, as I came up the escalator at Holborn Tube Station, I remember thinking to myself, hang on, why is it that I'm not stressed? Because I remember the days when I first started at this firm, when I'd go back home completely frazzled and stressed out. Whereas 7, 10 years ago, I suddenly realised I had no stress of that kind in my life at all because of the trend towards dealing with family law matters in a consensual way, in a more peaceful way, to provide a solution. And we're all happier that way. It's a win-win situation. So I think that we've been incredibly lucky to work here during that time and incredibly lucky to work in this firm because, you know, this is a firm full of reasonable people. Why did I stay here working for 35 years? I stayed working here for 35 years because I really enjoyed working with the people I worked with. They were reasonable people. They didn't pick arguments. They didn't stab me in the back every 3 seconds. They facilitated, they helped, they mentored. you worked with them. And it's been a lovely environment to do this kind of work in.
And in terms of what you've seen over that time, presumably given that there's been this change, and I would echo that having practiced in family law for four years at the beginning of my career, that it has changed, it's much less adversarial. Do you think that the clients' concerns, where I would say 20, 25 years ago, clients were really worried about money, the needs basis was very difficult, particularly for non-earning wives. Would you say that the concerns are much broader now, that money's not the only issue, is lifestyle, is well-being? Obviously children always play a factor. Are there ways in which that has changed?
Family law is very, very simple. You can make it complicated, but in essence it's very, very simple. And I think if you go by the adage that common sense is the best guide to family law, then you're not going to go wrong. And children are obviously more important than money.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that is something that I find my clients who have children, and most of them do, are going to be wanting to talk about and to be reassured about. And I think reassurance is one of the most important words I would ever use to describe meetings with clients, especially first meetings, because so often a family client comes in with a lot of worries,
yeah,
a lot of worries about the future. You know, everyone knows divorce or separation or moving home. These are all stressful events in one's life. And it's a question of reassurance. And so often, people can be easily reassured. Talking about children, talking about finance. So one of my favourite colleagues who has worked with me for many, many years in this firm once startled our partners' conference by standing up in front of the 80 partners at this grand annual conference and saying, it's easy being a family lawyer. All you have to be able to do is to divide by two. Cue laughter from the other 79 partners. And you know what? You know what? He's right. You know what? In a long marriage involving wealth that has been built up over time and involving children, you're going to divide by two. And it's not that difficult to do. So again, it's easy to reassure.
Yeah.
It's very, very easy.
I think it's interesting you say that, because what I've seen in the sort of on the private client side, where we're advising on estate planning, there's less fraught things going on. Actually, people came to me 20 years ago and all they were interested in doing was saving tax. And actually now they're coming in and saying, you know, my son has had a mental breakdown and I need to make sure that I protect him. I'm a wealthy individual. I need to make sure the money, if something happens to me, goes to the right people to look after for him. And so that sort of sense of feeling secure and understanding what's going to happen if they're not there anymore, whether they lose capacity, whether they die, they're not so driven by the money anymore. So the tax, they're much more driven by what will happen when I'm not here. Is it all going to make sense?
I find this conversation quite ironic in the sense that you and I have literally not rehearsed our various conversation pieces, and we are just having a free conversation. But I'm going to pick up on one word which you mentioned there, and I absolutely agree with you, which is the word security. What do my clients want? What are they expecting? What they want is security. They want emotional security, and they want financial security. Financial security is obvious. And to be frank, a Farrah's client will emerge from a case with financial security. And emotional security goes with what we were talking about at the beginning, the more holistic kind of aspect. And again, being a family lawyer is such an interesting thing. You know, we talk a lot about artificial intelligence nowadays. People say that maybe the computer will give you 7/10 of the answer and the lawyer will produce the extra 3/10 of the answer. But, you know, you're never going to have, at this level of advice at a firm like Farrah's, you're never going to have a truly artificial intelligence-led system, because every single one of us has our own pressure points, our own concerns, our own worries, our own needs for individual security, whatever that may be. And it's the bespoke service that we offer, whether we're in private client like you are, whether we're family lawyers like I am, whether we are charity lawyers, whatever we are, there's going to be an amalgam of concerns that come together. Again, you mentioned estate planning. I obviously started with a very simplistic 50-50 scenario. And obviously, life isn't that simple. And obviously, many of our clients, for example, might have estates. And again, the law will respect premarital wealth. Mm. It will respect family wealth. Again, I might say that this is common sense. I mean, they've been doing this in France for years. They've been doing this in France for since Napoleon's time, the Napoleonic system of family property, which is preserved and kept apart from marital property, which is mixed.
Yeah.
So this is all very, very simple. We have had to do a lot of catching up. We've had negligent governments of every single persuasion, whether they're Labour, whether they're liberal stroke conservative, or whether they're conservative. None of them have grappled with financial law in relation to divorce since 1973. So the Supreme Court, God bless it, has done its bit and has come in to create these systems of respecting separate property, mixed property, and of course, and this is a subject I think of a different podcast, marital contracts, autonomy, people deciding between themselves how they want to order their finances, whether they want to protect an estate, whether they want to protect a business. How are you going to fund a wife or a husband who's married to a businessman or businesswoman with a big business? How are you going to provide enough capital? How are you going to release the capital? Many of our cases like this.
I think that's very interesting because I think when we're doing estate planning, we're thinking about how people are going to leave their estates to people. We're advising trustees, we're advising executors. There are often deals to be done, as indeed there are in family law. And I would say one thing that is interesting, where family law has become, you would hope, more consensual and more open to mediation, etc., we are seeing a lot more probate cases becoming disputes, basically. And there seems to be a real wave of that sort of litigation, if you like. Some of it doesn't quite get to court, but it is highly sort of fraught disputes between family members.
I've been involved in
on
those.
The increase, and I've got two on at the moment. And
you've got two on.
And it's troubling in that sense.
Well, I've just had two of them settled by our fantastic colleagues in the disputes team.
Mm.
But actually, counterintuitively, they haven't been settled by litigation. Each of those disputes has been settled by mediation. And I'm sure we'll come on to mediation in the family law field, which is very much part of the geography of family law and international family law. But the probate disputes I've seen, because they've involved clients of mine, have been settled with very sophisticated mediation by QCs.
Yeah.
Very sophisticated, difficult situations, but have been settled.
And I think you'd agree, wouldn't you, that in terms of reassuring clients and seeing this from the client perspective, to see their lawyers sort of bashing 10 lumps out of each other, you would hope is not a very attractive sight, not least because it will increase the costs, the time spent, the stress levels, etc. So clients tend to welcome the opportunity to mediate, I find. Would you say that that's generally the case
on
the family law side too?
Again, we're all different. All our clients are different. And I could give you the names of 15 lawyers who would I'm certainly not going to go anywhere near doing it, but I could easily do it, and we all know them, who would absolutely love to spend their time dictating and then sending poisonous letters out to the lawyers acting on the other side, pouring £50 and £100 notes down the drain in rapid succession. Now, actually, what I'm saying to you is the trend has been very much against that.
Mm.
I think quite rightly, solicitors have been put under spotlight. You know, you see those polls, don't you, of unpopular professions.
Yes.
I'm quite sure that divorce lawyers feature towards the top of that list every time there's a poll. And actually, that always really upsets me. It really upset me when Gary Lineker got divorced the second time. And he proudly proclaimed, and by the way, I'm one of his, whatever it is, 5 million Twitter followers, so I knew exactly what he was saying. And actually, most of his tweets, and by the way, he has retweeted one of my tweets, which I was very pleased about.
Walker's
Crisps tweet. I saw the guys in the commentary box at Queen's the other day eating Walker Crisps. So I sent a quick tweet to Lineker, and within 5 minutes, he'd retweeted it. So very proud. But getting back to the subject, Lineker sent out this tweet saying, "Aren't I great? You know, Danielle and I have just settled our case and we've done it without lawyers because lawyers are poisonous and they get in the way." And it really upset me because actually, if you look at the stats, 90% of lawyers who do family law do it responsibly.
Yeah.
And I'm very, very, very proud to be a member of this firm because this is something, Brani, with respect, you wouldn't know. So one of our senior partners was Dick Griffiths. Dick Griffiths was the best family lawyer I've ever worked with, and I worked with a lot of good family lawyers. Dick Griffiths was a founder member of something called Resolution. It was called Solicitors Family Law Association.
I was a member many years ago.
You remember, but you didn't know, did you, that Dick Griffiths, senior partner of Farr & Co, was one of the founding members.
I did not.
Which
know
he
that.
Was.
Yeah.
And I'm very, very proud that this firm, Farr & Co, was in the vanguard of changing how family law is done. Mm. The move towards amicable settlements, always putting children first. That is not a pious aspiration. You would not last 2 seconds in our family team unless you worked in that way.
Mm.
You wouldn't last 2 seconds. In fact, you wouldn't even get past the first interview. And we're proud of our training, the young lawyers coming through who always are excellent and always behave in that kind of way. And that's what clients expect. Just imagine for a moment that you're a Farrah's client.
Mm.
You could never be because, you know, you're a partner here. But just imagine you're a Farrah's client and you're sitting at home and you remember the old days of snail mail. You remember the old days? In the old days, people used to send letters in the post.
Mm.
Remember? And they put a stamp on and it came through a letterbox. And they, can you imagine being a divorce client of Farr & Co and having these letters thudding through your letterbox day after day after day, or flooding your email inbox? That's not what you pay lawyers for.
Mm.
You're paying lawyers to stay away from a case, to advise you, to facilitate a settlement, and to let you get on with it, if you can,
yeah,
to resolve matters amicably with your husband or your wife without lawyers crawling all over the case at vast expense. That's the last thing that we want.
Yeah. And I think it's something that interests me endlessly, the sort of journey through people's relationships, etc. It's part of the reason I started as a family lawyer and then became a private client lawyer, which I personally find less stressful. So we're going to talk now, Simon, a little bit about the future for family law and where we see disputes over broken relationships going in terms of how international families deal with issues. They don't have to necessarily be very wealthy families. You do have families who live across borders with fairly modest means. Do you have any sort of ideas in relation to the ability of the clients to plan ahead using these sort of private judicial mediation solutions? And is there any sort of hope that we might get no-fault divorce in the UK? You know, where do you see it going in the UK, bearing in mind we're in the middle of huge political and economic turmoil and that family law sometimes gets kicked to the back of the queue?
Just picking up your point, Brownie, about trends and about where we're going to go, I think this is very easy to foresee for the next 5 to 10 years. So there's going to be a continuation of what we have been noticing during the last 5 or 10 years of people avoiding court litigation. I can honestly say to you, Brownie, that apart from the completely dysfunctional cases which involve sex abuse, drug addiction, abduction of children, apart from those kind of cases, the forum for our clients' disputes and separations to be resolved will be round a table, like the table that we're sitting at now.
Yeah.
It will be using expert mediators. I now don't go to the retired judges. I now go to the top lawyers, the QCs, people who are doing these cases day by day and who have built up a bit of a reputation for doing them. I've had arbitrations rather than court hearings, for example. Again, it's all about being responsive to a client and being user-friendly. Does your client want to go into the tense atmosphere of a court building, or does your client prefer to resolve matters in a more relaxed and natural way?
Mm.
So I can honestly say to you, Brownie, that between 95 and 98% of our cases can be settled without going near a court. And that trend will continue. And that's not just an English trend. That's a trend that you see throughout the world. I sometimes wonder, some of my best friends are American lawyers, American family lawyers. I often work with American family lawyers in my cases because often, of course, there will be different jurisdictions involved in the case and you'll work hand in hand with a foreign lawyer who will give foreign law input. And I sometimes wonder about American lawyers and whether they're much more attuned to litigation than we are.
Yeah, it's more sort of courtroom.
Yeah, and suppose, you know, they talk about custody disputes a lot, and whereas we don't, we never do, because we never have them.
No.
I think, again, that English family law can be proud of its achievements and being a leading light towards amicable resolutions. There's something else which I think I would mention to you because you might find this of interest, which is working with international lawyers. So I've recently been doing cases with, for example, lawyers from Hong Kong. Because as you probably know, Hong Kong law in relation to family law is the same as English law. And so, you know, every single one of Farah's meeting rooms will have a screen in it where you can beam in anything going on in any part of the world.
Yeah.
So I will have meetings with lawyers from all over the world in my meeting room at Farah's, maybe with a client, or I will be talking with a client who may be in Hong Kong, and we may be going through a client's affidavit, his statement of means, his application, whatever it is. And so working with foreign lawyers in a very, very obvious, easy way. I did mention artificial intelligence before, and I'm going to mention it again, because I'm very proud of this firm and the fact that we are in the vanguard in trying to properly introduce artificial intelligence in an appropriate way. For example, if anyone does a sworn statement of their means, they will normally attach 12 months of bank statements in relation to each bank account. They will normally attach a budget which will show how much money they spend each year. You have to do it with your husband, with your wife, whatever you are, you have to show your spending. Now, you only have to think about it for a second to understand that artificial intelligence can easily provide a budget, an analysis of expenditure, an analysis of credit card expenditure, much more quickly, much more cheaply than a trainee solicitor would,
yeah,
or an associate would.
Mm.
So, you know, I think it's very, very obvious that firms in the vanguard can make significant savings for clients in that kind of way and be much more scientific about it as well.
Mm. And those sorts of calculations have been, even if they're sort of anecdotal, have been used, I think, in family law for a long time in terms of determining how you produce a particular income for someone, etc.
It's quite frustrating, actually, especially for people who are financially sophisticated. So for years and years, we've been producing tables showing what capital sum may be required by a husband or a wife, rather than having a continuing income stream. Well, say a man aged, say, 42, so you're going to live for another 45 years, so you're going to spend, say, £100,000 a year, compute that, imagine a tax rate of 3%, imagine an income return of, say, 3.25%. All these completely artificial, made-up figures are put in there.
I'd love a tax rate of 3%. That would be brilliant. carry
yeah,
on.
I probably meant to say investment return of 3%.
That's fine. Don't, please,
and,
carry on.
Thank you for listening and pointing out my egregious error.
The private client pedant
speaks. There we are. So you get all these calculations produced, and they're very frustrating, actually, for the individual concerned, I think, because how can you possibly foresee what the interest rate will be in X year's time? How can you possibly... You produce these figures and go to a bank now and say, can you produce this interest for the next 40 years? No, of course we can't. It's an artificial consideration. So there's a lot of laziness in family law. That is an example of lazy thinking.
Mm.
But I was talking with a family lawyer from Canada the other day. So say you're acting in a Canadian case, or actually, yesterday we had dinner with an Austrian lawyer. Say you're acting in an Austrian case, then there are specific formulas for what the income will be of a wife or a husband in a case.
Gosh.
And you will look at the overall income, you'll take a percentage, and then you'll change it a bit depending on how many children there are, and you'll come up with a certain figure. You know, family law can get that simplistic.
Yeah.
We've done that with child maintenance. We haven't yet done that with maintenance of wives and husbands. And that's one route to make family law more certain, albeit more arbitrary and open to debate and, you know, whether it's appropriate in that particular case or not, why should it be appropriate, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that's sort of the human factor, isn't it?
Yes, yes, coming back to the bespoke human factor,
indeed,
which the English system provides for. But how long can it continue to provide for it, Brownie?
Well, we'll
you know,
see,
there's
we?
No legal aid. You don't get legal aid for family law cases.
No.
So most cases now involve people who don't have lawyers. It is now the minority of cases which have lawyers.
Right.
And so you're entering into a system where people are litigating without lawyers, where judges are having to be helpers as well as judges. Our court system is on its knees.
Yeah.
And that's why you come back to private judging.
Mm.
So you're at Farrenco, you're not going to go to the court system.
Yeah, it's such a shame for the people that can't afford that, though. And I think that that's one of the things where passing on our knowledge and our pearls of wisdom about making reasonable arrangements as between two people, that's absolutely critical. And I think what you said about, you know, making sure that people can have consensual arrangements, it can only benefit the family. I think it can only benefit the children, whether they're minors or whether they're adults.
I don't see why it shouldn't be. I don't see why people without money shouldn't be able to use the same private means of settlement. They'd have to be able to afford a private judge.
Yeah.
And there will be. It's a market, isn't it? There's always a market.
Yeah.
There will be people
there
out
there.
There
will be people who
will do a, you know, a day for whatever it is, 200 quid, whatever it is. So I think actually we too glibly assume that the private judging is only for the rich, but it's not.
Well, I think that's very encouraging. Simon, thank you so much. I'm going to sort of try and sort of wind up the conversation now, if that's okay, and just tell people a little bit about what we'll be doing next. We are going to have three more podcasts in this session. We are going to talk to one of Simon's wonderful colleagues, Claire Gordon, about marital agreements. I think that will be a very interesting conversation. One of the key issues for our clients is philanthropy. So we're going to talk to James Maloney about charities, setting up charitable foundations, using other methods to give to charity, maybe touching a little bit on social enterprise. And then we're going to talk to Tom Rudkin about privacy and reputation management, which for some of our clients who are in the public eye or who will be in the public eye if their lives become public, people are very interested in certain types of people who are involved in particular industries, the music industry, etc., who we look after. So we're going to talk to Tom as well. So I think it probably just remains for me to say thank you, Simon. This is the first of hopefully quite a few podcasts.
Will you
come back? That's the question.
I will, but I do feel cheated. Because you said that you're going to allow me to mention Liverpool Football Club at least once.
Oh.
And I now have.
Is there anything you can tell us about this season that will send people off with joy in their hearts?
No.
They did rather well, I seem to remember.
Very well. But also allow me to mention that I'm so pleased that Claire will be talking about marital contracts, and it's with great pride that Farron Co. can say that our client, Mrs. Radmacher, changed the law in England. So the irony of a German heiress changing English family law, having been married to a French husband in relation to the respect for marital contracts. And that case will be quoted for the next 100 years.
Yeah.
So it's with great pride that we are able to talk about that subject.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you, Simon. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
We'll hopefully have some more listeners next time.